businesses have a responsibility throughout their entire value chains to respect human rights. If you can apply pressure at the top of the supply chain strategically, then you can achieve change at the bottom.
You are listening to Radio Atticus,
your national program on the law in the name of social justice.
This is obviously a live issue, and we need to start to talk about how we might regulate it here so that we aren't outsourcing our problems.
People are curious. They look at you and they want to know your story.
Radio Atticus, more than the vibe.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Radio Atticus. We'll hear from Alana, who speaks on behalf of women with disability. Stay with us and be enamoured by her story. Alana Julian is the Living Life My Way Disability Ambassador from Central Coast, New South Wales, and also the current President of Rotaract Central Coast. She often speaks on behalf of people with disability and have started her own public speaking business. She starts off by explaining the significance of International Women's Day for her.
International Women's Day to me is when women come together to celebrate their achievements, how they contribute to society, what they do with their work, acknowledging that they contribute to service clubs or volunteer work or charity work or their paid employment. And it's about just celebrating women and what we've done in this world. There was a wonderful event celebrating women and how they contribute to society from many different organisations all over the Central Coast. My role was in my position at the event was being the Living Life My Way Central Coast Disability Ambassador and the president of the Central Coast Young Adult Rotaract Club. And I think this event was really important to me because it brought together all different types of women with their families and getting to know each other and sharing our life experiences, talking about what we have achieved, listening also to women that have done great things in their life and being inspired by that.
You mentioned sharing life experiences. Can you share a little bit what these experiences were?
Some of the experiences that were shared was how someone who had a mental disorder and had to overcome a lot to get where they are today, and they used like everything they could to achieve what they had to achieve, and how they overcame their illness and to achieve so much in their life, whether it's in their role as a mother or in their job or what they've contributed to society.
As a young woman advocating for people with disability, why do you think events like this are important for communities around Australia and in New South Wales to support?
I think events like this for the community to support are important because it brings together women in their diverse roles to acknowledge them, whether it's in their job, volunteering or charity work, and involvement in service clubs. And these events also involve guest speakers who inspire these women. Events such as this present a great opportunity to find out about other services and organisations in the local community. It also like a great opportunity for networking as well.
I found that also from your background, and like I said, you're quite famous and popular, that you did speak up about jobs are so important, and I guess also for women. Can you talk a little bit about what are some of the challenges with jobs?
Some of the challenges for jobs for women, I refer to with intellectual disabilities, as I myself have an intellectual disability, is that women struggle to gain work because sometimes they can lack confidence in what their abilities are and taking the initiative to go for a job. Yeah, that they lack confidence in that. Or there's a lot of other reasons too that could be hard for employment, is that women I've found that have disabilities, when they leave school, they feel a bit stuck to gain employment, and generally they go into a day service program, or they study at TAFE, or they're just a bit stuck on where they can go. And I just think that maybe of more organisations giving a chance to women with disabilities to employment opportunities, to give them a chance and provide them with the right support, because I think if someone with an intellectual disability or disability in general struggles in employment, that it's important to have that support they might not have.
What was so important, the kind of support needed to be able to like increase that confidence to get that work, get that job?
Well, in my own experiences, I know with my current job as a facilitator and a community engagement officer for My Choice Matters, from the beginning I did courses with them, and they kind of got to learn about what my strengths are. And when they got to learn about my strengths, they invited me to contribute to the organization to demonstrate the things that I was good at. And along the way, they gave me a support. So whatever work I needed to do for them, that they were always never short of a hand, that they're always there and holding my hand, but still letting me go. And they knew I was okay to proceed in my work tasks. And they helped me find confidence over the years to event. Like, I was only just doing like little things for them here and there, but eventually they helped me with support and encouragement to actually lead into becoming employed as employee of theirs. So it was like a long journey of like training and as well and seeing what I could bring to the organization.
Also, I found that you like arts and craft, and you also like performance art.
I do.
Can you tell me a little bit why you like these creative pursuits? What is it about it that you like? Why?
I like these creative pursuits because I found when I was young, I found that I was quite a quiet person, and I found that with performing arts that my mom encouraged me to be part of, it helped me to, like dance classes for example, it helped me to express myself and to gain confidence. And yeah, and I also enjoy creative arts, and I feel that creative arts is also another way for me to express myself and skills that I've been identified very much so in school. But my teachers realized that I had strengths there, and I felt that, yeah, creativity is just something that I'm just so passionate about, and it just seems to come naturally to me.
Is it a bit like a release of emotions and things that you can't express, but you can express it in another way?
Yeah, I'd say it's exactly like that. It's definitely how I can. Sometimes I might not be able to express verbally or what I write and how I feel about things. And I think that art and dancing, or even I even do drama, that helps me to express about different emotion and things like that.
What is your message to other young women like you for International Women's Day?
Well, my message to women like me is to find your voice, find your passion, believe in yourself, step out of your comfort zone, and by doing this you will find your strengths and use this to gain the confidence to step out into your community and look for ways to contribute, and check out the local newspaper, community notice boards, or just join that group you have been thinking about joining.
I guess what I wanted to also ask, we know now that you're very into dancing.
And yes.
You like public speaking as well.
I do.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your strengths?
Well, I love computers. I like to go on computers and use the internet. I like creative writing. I think that's, you know, if I can't express myself in art, that I use writing blogs, like blogs to express myself and get my views across. My other strength, I like to read. I like to be lost in a book. And yeah, I'd say there's some of my few strengths.
Do you feel comfortable talking about what you did in Living Life My Way?
I had been involved in the Living Life My Way project for 4 years now, and the Living Life My Way project is where 47 people with disabilities from different parts of New South Wales are in like a public speaking role, and we share our story, our dreams and our goals, and how we overcame challenges. and we get people thinking about transitioning to the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And we advocate for people with disabilities by speaking up and speaking out. I think I've really enjoyed being part of this project by seeing people being inspired, empowering people to reach their full potential, and providing people with awareness to different communities and organizations about people with disabilities.
Alana Julian there, president of Rotaract Australia in Central Coast, New South Wales, also a young female ambassador for Living Life My Way, a program which was the precursor of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. I'm Anna-Marie Reyes.
Doing everything that I believe in, going by the rules that I've been taught, more understanding of what's around me, and protected from the walls of love. Oh, that you sees me, and all I truly.
That song by Delta Goodrum, Born to Try, was specially requested by Alana. And now a quick change of pace. Reporter Barry Mackay looked into legal bullying and what is actually involved and what your rights are.
Legal bullying may come from a government agency, large companies, or wealthy individuals who have the resources to pay lawyers to assert their power. These lawyers may well know all the tricks of the trade to frighten people unnecessarily and or to get them hooked into a process of litigation that never should have been entered into by the respondent at all. In this report, I'd like to look at some of the issues surrounding one particular type of legal bullying that may more likely be experienced by some listeners, that being responding to heavy-handed tactics by creditors or debt collectors. I spoke with Will Dwyer, the credit and debt solicitor at the Redfern Legal Centre in Sydney, who deals with a lot of clients who find themselves in this situation. I began by asking him how those who find themselves on the receiving end of legal bullying typically feel.
Well, it's a very stressful situation for a lot of people. We encounter clients who are very anxious about their livelihoods. The fear of going to court really is a very strong fear, and it's something that causes people a great deal of concern, particularly when they don't know where, in fact, they stand, what their rights might be, and whether, in fact, their position is a strong one or not.
What forms can legal bullying take in the context of corporate debt collection?
The most common thing we encounter is people who are in financial hardship. They're struggling to pay the bills, to repay loans, or accessing improper forms of credit, which are very costly and which leave them paying a lot more for access to basic things than, in fact, people with more financial resources tend to access. So where people are in financial hardship and they haven't met repayment obligations, whether it's under a loan, whether it's under an electricity bill, a mobile phone bill, or, for example, repaying something like a consumer lease, which is a very costly form of credit, the debt will be chased firstly by the company, and then quite often it's either sold off or collected by a debt collection agency on behalf of the company. The debt collection process really takes the form of contacting a debtor and applying pressure to them to get them to repay a debt. People who owe a debt clearly can't pay the whole lot in one go, and it's even more difficult where they're struggling financially. So quite often a debtor will negotiate with a debt collection agency to repay a debt off over several years or to repay it by installments.
So how does legal bullying take place in this type of situation?
Well, most of the time it really is about the pressure applied by a creditor, whether that creditor is a company, a bank, a debt collection agency or a government agency, or just a general company who is owed a sum of money by a consumer.
Typically, what sorts of threats would you receive in the mail?
Well, the letters take a variety of forms. They're generally called letters of demand, where they set out a debt and set out consequences for non-payment of the debt. And quite often they're phrased in a way which makes it seem as though the debt collector is willing to take their claim to a court to get a court judgment forcing a debtor to repay the creditor through the court process, when in fact it's very unlikely for smaller debts, certainly any debt less than $5,000, that a creditor or a debt collection agency will in fact litigate the debt to seek a court judgment to repay it, because there are significant costs in obtaining a court judgment in terms of resources, legal costs, as well as uncertainty around recovery.
What rights do people have when they find themselves in a situation where they can't repay their debt and they're being threatened in this way?
There's a whole host of rights, really. And at the end of the day, people can't repay money that they don't have. And people need to prioritise their basic living expenses, paying the rent, paying the bills, putting food on the table before making repayments to any sort of debt collector. So the debt collection agencies recognise this, as do banks and other creditors, that they can only really negotiate with people to repay a fair and appropriate amount of a debt and to do it on fair terms over an appropriate length of time. So there are quite a lot of rights which people who receive letters of demand have, and they range from having the right to maintain a basic living income and to get advice on really the nature of their debt, whether there's scope for negotiating to pay a reduced amount of the debt, to putting a hold on interest, fees and charges which accrue along with the debt, or to convince a debt collector that someone is in such financial hardship that they have no capacity to repay a debt and that debt should be written off or waived, which is something which we regularly assist clients to negotiate.
Would it be advisable to tell people if they're in really difficult circumstances to declare bankruptcy?
Bankruptcy is always the last resort, but it's certainly something which either a debtor can do on their own behalf, or it's something where a creditor can also initiate, where someone has a judgment debt for more than $5,000. But again, there's significant cost to a creditor to wind someone up for bankruptcy in terms of the legal costs and the resources to do it. It would probably cost an organisation, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 in legal costs to petition for someone's bankruptcy. And they're unlikely to make that decision to bankrupt someone unless there are assets which they're likely to be able to recover their debt from. So quite often it's property, real estate, or luxury goods, which are provable assets in bankruptcy and which will be sold by a trustee to repay the creditors. But if someone doesn't have an interest in real estate and they don't have any valuable assets, then really there's no point in a creditor bankrupting them because they're unlikely to generate any return.
What sorts of tricks do lawyers typically use to get their way in the power game that is legal bullying?
So in the context of debt recovery, much of it revolves around what is said in a letter of demand and how it's phrased in terms of a debt collector's intentions to commence legal proceedings to recover a debt. The letters of demand will always say that the creditor or the debt collector may commence legal proceedings to recover a debt. But in terms of weighing up the costs and resources of litigating a debt versus the actual return that someone might get through that process, really it's rarely worth a debt collector's while to seek a judgment on a debt unless it's worth, you know, at least $5,000 or $10,000. And they think that there is some money which the debtor has, which they can access through a court enforcement process. So the court can enforce a judgment debt by issuing garnishee orders on someone's wages or on their bank account, which is a court order ordering an employer or a bank to repay some money directly to the judgment creditor. But there are protections in the law and the civil procedure and protections for Social Security against those types of orders, that Social Security income is protected from these garnishee orders, and the garnishee orders also need to leave a minimum saved amount in a bank account to allow someone to manage their basic living expenses.
So practically speaking, if you're living on Centrelink benefits and you find yourself in this sort of situation, you need not worry that your Centrelink benefits are going to be touched?
Well, it's always a cause of concern. The protection against Centrelink benefits from garnishee orders differs in different states, and there's the least protection in New South Wales in terms of the civil procedure. The protection only lasts as long as that money is characterised as Social Security, and after it's been retained in someone's bank account for more than 4 weeks, it's no longer defined as Social Security income and can be garnished through that process. But it's unlikely that a creditor will pursue someone who is solely reliant on Centrelink income, where they're apprised of that fact and where particularly they have a financial counsellor or community legal centre intervene by having an advocate represent someone to a debt collection agency. The power imbalance shifts significantly, and a lawyer or financial counsellor as well across the debt collection guidelines, which ASIC and the ACCC published in terms of limiting the type of contact between debt collectors and the people they're pursuing and regulating the types of things which can and can't be said in those sorts of letters of demand.
Are there times when letters of demand simply should be ignored, and when should you ignore a letter and when not?
So probably the crucial time period at least is a statutory limitation period on recovery of a debt. So in New South Wales, a civil debt can only be recovered for 6 years from the time someone has either accrued the debt, last made a payment on the debt, or acknowledged the debt. So that clock will restart each time you either acknowledge or make a payment on the debt. So if you get a letter of demand from a debt which is approaching 5 or 6 years old, at that point it's crucial not to acknowledge the debt, not to respond to the letter of demand, or in fact do anything, because you don't want the clock to reset and you want to get the protection of the statutory limitation period. It's important to distinguish between a letter of demand and a statement of claim, which is the initiating process in a court, where a statement of claim requires you to file a response, a defence or something, within 28 days. And if you don't respond to a statement of claim, then it's likely the other party will get their judgment by default. A letter of demand is not a statement of claim, and any letter of demand which is designed to look like a court document or which misrepresents a debt collector's intention to start legal proceedings will likely breach the ASIC debt collection guidelines and may also breach the Australian consumer law.
Should people be frightened of debt collectors? Can they come and knock on your door and seize your furniture and goods and try to sell them?
They certainly can't enter your house or seize and sell property. They can approach you at home in certain circumstances, and they can call you with a certain frequency. The ACCC and ASIC debt collection guidelines limit, you know, the time of day or night when debt collectors can call and the frequency with which they can make the calls. It's also important to note that if you dispute liability for a debt, then a debt collector can't continue to pursue you for that debt through that process. That really the key thing to do where a debt collector is calling you regularly is to ask them for proof of the debt and to request that all communication with you is in writing and to explain that you're going to see a financial counsellor or a community legal centre and you're obtaining advice and that they should not contact you over the telephone and they should put to you their evidence of the debt in writing, and when you've had a chance to get legal advice you can respond to them appropriately.
What should listeners do if they find themselves in a legal bullying situation over debt recollection?
Really the best way to get some relief is to get good advice to know where you stand, and which tempers some of the urgency with which these letters of demand seem to create. So the best way to do that is to get in touch with a financial counsellor or a community legal centre, both of which are always free services. There is a national debt helpline, 1-800-007-007, which is a free service which people can access over the phone, where they can speak to a financial counsellor or a community lawyer to get advice about where they stand over the phone.
What if you're in a remote location and there are no free legal services nearby?
So probably the best way to access it is either online. There's some really good material online, either through the Financial Counsellors Association, individual community legal centres, fair trading organisations, or financial and consumer rights specific legal centres, where there's self-help material online, there's fact sheets and guidance about where you stand in terms of dealing with debt, or through the National Debt Helpline, where you can call that number during business hours and speak directly to a financial counsellor free of charge. That's really the most practical way to get some helpful advice. Don't feel pressured by letters of demand, because often their bark is worse than their bite, and you have a lot of leeway when it comes to negotiating with your creditors. And if you simply can't repay a debt and you're unlikely to be able to in the future, then a debt collector will ultimately recognise that on a commercial basis.
Those help details again. The National Debt Helpline can be contacted on 1-800-007-007. That's 1-800-007-007. The Financial Counsellors Association can be accessed through the internet at www.financialcounsellingaustralia.org.au. That's www.financialcounsellingaustralia.org.au. And there you can find links to local financial counselling services in your state or territory, or you can contact a local community legal centre for further advice on financial hardship issues and the law. My name is Barry Mackay. Thanks for listening.
Interviewing Will Dwyer from Redfern Legal Centre and ending that story on debt collection. Radio Atticus is broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network.
And that's about all we have time for in this edition. I hope you enjoy the show. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes saying bye for now.